how human rights has fallen from the global health policy agenda and how it could be reincorporated and what that reincorporation could do. And so I'm going to be talking largely about the Millennium Development Goals, the absence of human rights in the Millennium Development Goals, and how scholars, practitioners, policymakers are seeking to reincorporate human rights into what is now being called the post-2015 agenda or the Sustainable Development Goals. What happens when the Millennium Development Goals end, and what role human rights will play in pushing global health policy forward. And so the adoption of the Millennium Development Goals in 2000 represented an unprecedented step by the United Nations to identify specific development priorities and to effectively set the global health policy agenda for the next 15 years. But with the Millennium Development Goals set to expire now in 2015, it is coming sooner than we think, the global development community is beginning to process what the next step will look like, an implementation agenda for a new development project for the years to come. And so what is now being called this post-2015 development agenda has mobilized a diverse community of multi-sectoral actors in development, health, environment in particular, to try to come up with a new agenda that will frame this unique opportunity to reincorporate human rights. And so I ask, are we doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past? And my name is Benjamin Meyer, and I want to acknowledge the student who's been working with me on this issue because it changes by the week. And so as people push toward finalizing this new agenda in the coming year, what role is there for human rights in advancing these obligations for global health? And so while the original Millennium Development Goals, as I mentioned, neglected rights-based approaches to health, I question whether we are doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past, or whether human rights advocates have successfully argued that the Millennium Development Goals are wanting for human rights, and that the post-2015 agenda would be improved for global health if it included these human rights. And so I begin with what is really thought of as the rallying call, because this panel addresses issues of human rights, and it's powerful policy discourses through human rights that seek to challenge the status quo. And so as really elaborated by Jonathan Mann, one of the forebearers of what is thought of as a human rights movement, he said that a commitment to human rights starts within each of us as a conceptual leap. It is a leap because it embodies the difference between seeing something like food, voting, education, or healthcare as a right compared to thinking of them as privileges. And it's a leap because human rights inevitably represents a challenge to the status quo. And so how do we employ human rights to challenge the status quo, to frame our development efforts to address the public's health? And so Jonathan Mann is an advocate, a practitioner, and a scholar, really argues that public health is struggling to articulate its core values. And so the people on this panel and the Human Rights Committee at APHA look to human rights as a basis for values in public health. To the extent that human rights seeks to achieve justice throughout the globe, how can human rights become that moral framework, trying to help us to conceptualize what it is that we need to do to achieve the highest attainable standard of health? And so in this presentation, what I'm going to seek to do is analyze the expanding influence of human rights in global health, both in international health law and now in global health policy. With this presentation, really outlining a way that we can think about applying human rights in the post-2015 agenda. And so with human rights really evolving in global health governance, I'm going to talk about both what human rights do, how they're conceptualized, what they do for public health, something I've already begun. I'll move from there to talk about the evolution of largely what we think of as a human right to health in international law, and then moving from the auspicious beginnings of a human right to health in the aftermath of the Second World War all the way through the neglect of human rights in the 2000 Millennium Development Goals. And then moving forward from 2000 to the present day, the final part of my presentation will discuss the implementation of human rights and how the process is unfolding in developing the post-2015 agenda and what role human rights is playing and what role it could play in our global efforts to promote health. And so as we go through, it'll light up to show you where we are in those three areas. And so when we talk about human rights here, we're talking largely about these legal claims that belong to all people. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights begins with a litany of qualifications. Human rights belong to all people, regardless of race, gender, sex, ethnicity. They could have not included any of this. They could have just said, human rights belong to all people. They are universal, everyone. They are indivisible. They cannot be disaggregated from one another. We cannot talk about a right to education and a right to health separately. We need to think of them together at the same time. They're inalienable. They can't be taken away from you, no matter what you have done. And that they are interdependent. That not only can we not talk about human rights separately, but we have to recognize the causal mechanisms that link various human rights. How fulfilling a human right to a sustainable environment influences global health. And so in this context, we think about governmental obligations to respect, protect, and fulfill rights, to understand what it is that governments can do for you, cannot do to you, and should do for you. To respect rights by not infringing on those rights through government action. To protect individuals from harm from third parties. And to fulfill rights, to facilitate the active realization of these rights. And so in moving forward, we say that human rights are social claims. They're entitlements that individuals have simply by being humans. And so these are protections from government. They are protections from third parties. And they require specific government obligations in order to assure that these rights are realized under the assumption, as Ban Ki-moon notes here, that every life has equal value, that every death violates human rights. And so focusing on the mechanisms by which these claims are made, we say that the human rights-based approach would seek to identify individual rights holders and their entitlements and the corresponding duty bearers and their obligations. And the people on this panel are actively seeking to strengthen the ability of rights holders to demand rights from duty bearers and actively seeking to assist duty bearers in creating programs to realize those rights. And so we might say that human rights are that which a person is entitled to have or to do or to receive from others, and that is enforceable by law. And so philosophically, we might say that this is posited as X has a right against Y in relation to Z, where X is the rights holder, Y is the duty bearer, and Z is the object or the purpose of that right. And so that makes no sense. And so we've included an example here, which gives a better idea of how this philosophical proposition plays itself out. And so we might say that a child, as a rights holder, has a claim against the national government as a duty bearer for a right to health, the object of that right. And so a demand is made from the rights holder to the duty bearer, and then the duty bearer bears obligations, legal obligations, to realize that right through programs, policies, direct actions. And so in this case, we think about this demand for a budget allocation, a policy, and it's really a way of empowering individuals. Because at the end of the day, human rights is about empowerment, transferring power from the duty bearer, the national government, to the rights holder, not merely as a means of creating a charitable donation, but creating an active claim, empowering individuals to make claims against their governments so that they are entitled to things and not merely accepting things. And so rights becomes a form of empowerment that we can look to in understanding this evolution. And so when we think about this, particularly in the context of global health, we think about health and human rights existing where international law codifies or puts into law human rights as a basis for realizing, as a basis for realizing public health. And so this is where the health and human rights movement lies. And in this context, international law offers a powerful policy discourse that framing human rights, or framing health disparities as rights violations, offers international standards by which to frame government responsibilities, by which to frame the conduct of national governments, shifting our analysis from one of merely social justice. I shouldn't say merely when I talk about social justice, but shifting us from social justice to legal obligation. And so before entering this, I want to really emphasize that human rights matter, that what we write into a law has an effect on the behavior of national governments. And we think about the paradigmatic case of slavery, that what was once a common economic practice throughout most of the developed world, through a series of international legal prescriptions, was effectively swept from the globe. And to the extent that slavery exists today, it is widely recognized as a violation of international human rights. And yet these human rights did not come down from Mount Sinai on stone tablets. Are they really celebrating the baseball game? Go Giants. It's Giants, right? Wow, I'm getting heckled already. And so human rights are not static norms. They change. There are new winners every year. They evolve over time. And so we can look to this evolution to see how our norms change. I began by saying that slavery was once a common practice but is now thought to be a violation of human rights. How has our understanding of health as a human right changed over time? And part of this is looking to our international laws, how states are coming together through the United Nations to both develop law that codifies human rights and how those human rights are then implemented through national programming. How can we look to these different treaties and to these different national practices as indicative of an evolving set of human rights throughout the world? And then finally, when we think about human rights, I want to emphasize the extent to which it has become a basis for global health governance. That when we think about our global efforts to improve the world, people will always begin the conversation, whether at APHA, whether at the World Health Organization, whether at the United Nations or at the Gates Foundation, by emphasizing the extent to which their efforts to improve health in the world are being driven by a commitment to human rights. To what extent can we move from that general commitment to human rights to focus on specific frameworks that allow us to think through what it is that we should be doing and how it is that we should be doing it to advance global health? And so moving from theory to evolution, I want to begin at the end of the Second World War. And this is really where our contemporary human rights system is built, linking international affairs to our normative concerns for social justice. Human rights are established at the end of the Second World War for health, most principally in the Constitution of the World Health Organization, wherein states declared in 1946 that the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of health is one of the fundamental rights of every human being. And this is actually the signing of the document that makes the world Health Organization part of the United Nations, wherein states sought to define this right to health by noting that health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity, moving us beyond a focus on simply trying to protect powerful commercial interests through blocking the international spread of communicable disease by focusing on health promotion. Trying not only to eliminate disease, but to focus on how to make people well and to improve their well-being. And recognizing that in order to do that, it was not relevant simply to control individuals, but to have a responsibility for governments as the duty bearers to the health of their peoples, which can be fulfilled only by the provision of adequate health and adequate social measures. An understanding of underlying determinants of health. And so moving forward from this normative vision of complete health would structure the international community's emphasis on health and would come to frame what became the human rights focus of the United Nations, taken up on the heels and working through a universal declaration of human rights that would express a common standard of achievement, proclaiming a right to health by which everyone has a right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and of his family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care and necessary social services. Note here the language of both medical care and a focus on underlying determinants of health, specifically including underlying determinants for food, clothing, housing, and necessary social services. And so moving forward from this standard in the UDHR, following on from the World Health Organization Constitution, building out of the ashes of the Second World War in order to create a healthier world, we move toward an international legal focus that would abandon the standard of complete health and a human right to health, that would look instead to what was referred to as the highest attainable standard of health. And this is probably the coolest thing I've ever held in my hand. This is the original document where someone typed up the language of the human right to health in the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. It took everything in me not to steal it from the UN archives. But I took a picture and I present it to you today, and it's still there if you want to check. And so moving forward and focusing on this highest attainable standard of health, we've eliminated this notion of well-being from a human right to health, and we've neglected the language on these wide-ranging underlying determinants of health, moving back toward a focus on environmental and industrial hygiene. And so moving forward from this, how would nations seek to evolve a human right to health that would encompass these underlying determinants of health? And we see this most principally in the International Conference on Primary Health Care, what most people would probably call the Declaration of Alma-Ata. And so focusing in Alma-Ata, nations sought to culminate a rights-based approach that would include underlying determinants, would seek to reincorporate in global consensus a focus on WHO's definition of complete health, noting that health, which is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity, is a fundamental human right that requires the action of many other social and economic sectors in addition to the health sector. So those three principles from the WHO Constitution all squished together in one sentence. And so moving forward from this, human rights seeks to incorporate this idea of indivisibility and interdependence, seeking to understand the ways that not just health, but all human rights can be thought of as universal, indivisible, interdependent, and interrelated. Trying to conceptualize, a post-Cold War vision of human rights that would look to the ways that human rights are interconnected. How we can advance health moving forward by focusing on the various ways that human rights come together for health. And so seeking to reincorporate this in the human right to health, the Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, the UN committee responsible for interpreting the language of what we said was the weakened covenant on economic, social, and cultural rights, seeks to look to a way of employing a human right to health to address the wide-ranging underlying determinants of health under international law. In doing so, the committee said that the right to health extends not only to timely and appropriate health care, but also to underlying determinants of health, specifically including a much larger list than what we were even looking at in Alma-Ata, focusing on water, safe food, nutrition and housing, environmental conditions, and then not just health care, but health information, including specifically on sexual and reproductive health. And so, where do the Millennium Development Goals fit into this? The Millennium Development Goals, I began by saying, ignores human rights. And so from this, we're moving from legal obligations to non-binding commitments. We're moving away from international law, and we're talking about goals. Goals that are not enforced, that are not based upon human rights obligations, that are largely not seeking development as a means to improve health, but seeking health as a means to improve development. And so while the Millennium Development Goals would be heavily focused on health issues, it would be untied to the human rights agenda. And so, despite this international set of goals, there is no accountability for these goals. And so it was early on recognized that these Millennium Development Goals are wanting for human rights. And so Philip Alston, referring to the relationship between human rights and the MDGs, as ships passing in the night. I probably should have created more of a night scene in the background. Has said that the MDGs reflect only a partial human rights agenda, and a clear challenge exists to ensure that there is a full mutual compatibility. How can human rights become integrated? Recognizing the extent to which human rights are largely absent outside of a small preambular statement in the Millennium Declaration and the Millennium Development Goals. So the references to human rights are limited and they are tenuous. And beyond rhetorical acknowledgement, the MDGs avoid legal obligations under human rights with a preference for less normatively motivated language. They reflect a concerted effort to avoid the specific language of human rights, seeking to bring as many nations to the table as possible by avoiding the contentious conversations that would accompany human rights. And because of that, the MDGs have been largely ignored by the human rights community. And so it's not simply that development actors have ignored human rights, but by virtue of that, the human rights community has ignored the Millennium Development Goals. And so trying to understand the ways that these two sets of norms conflict with one another. The first is this difference between the conceptualization of the two approaches. That the Millennium Development Goals rely on national averages. They rely on national averages seeking a population level improvement. And I think we all know that one of the consequences of that is that when you're focusing on the average, you don't focus on the most marginalized. You don't focus on the inequities that exist within a nation. The second is the implementation and the way that these goals are framed. By having a goal, you have something you can reach. And many of these Millennium Development Goals were set to a point where they could be reached based upon national averages. Whereas human rights, in some ways, it's always crabby. Thus, I have no idea what's going on outside. Human rights practitioners are constantly looking for to progressively realize human rights. There is never complete realization. Human rights practitioners are never happy. Our goals are never met. My mother is very happy with that and nothing else. And then finally, an issue of accountability. And I began by saying that part of the goal of the Millennium Development Goals was to avoid specific enforceability mechanisms. By doing so, it was able to bring a lot of people to agree to a specific set of goals. It was able to get people to agree to a specific set of goals because they knew if they didn't meet them, nothing would happen. And so there's this tension between human rights, which is constantly seeking enforceable mechanisms for accountability for our standards, and the Millennium Development Goals, which are seeking to avoid enforcement mechanisms as a means to get everyone to the table. And so moving forward from this, the goals of the human rights and the post-2015 agenda, as we start to come up with what comes next, we're seeking to build upon the progress that has been made in the Millennium Development Goals, but to do so in a way that includes greater inclusivity, greater participation, to have these global goals, but to have them focused on the specific circumstances of each individual nation. To maintain a focus on progressivity, so that we're no longer meeting a goal, wiping our hands clean, and saying we have done our job. And we're also focusing not solely on time-limited goals, but creating sustainability. And so what comes after the Millennium Development Goals is going to be the big human rights challenge of the next several years. And so as this UN task force, this MDG task force, is moving through, they're having a series of high-level panels in the coming year. This is actually the UN's org chart. I use it as an example of how confusing the world is. But the important part here is the national consultations and the thematic consultations. And so we have a series of thematic consultations here on the bottom left. And the most important one that we're focusing on is health. And in focusing on health, the World Health Organization is working with both UNAIDS and UNICEF to frame what will be the new goals. And those new goals, whether they're one sentence, they're one paragraph, or one word, is going to structure how we move forward to address health in our global policy. And so focusing on how this is being conceptualized, there are three core values that are guiding the UN's formulation in the development agenda: sustainability, equality, and human rights. And I often note that whenever something is in the middle, it means that it's being ignored. Because when we have this idea of human rights, the UN has noted that it encompasses everything that is being done. And if human rights is structuring everything that the UN is doing, then it can largely be ignored in its specificity. And so to what extent is the focus of these four different areas that are going to be the focus of the UN's framework: environmental sustainability, inclusive economic growth, peace and security, and social development, going to be structured by human rights? Is this just a buzzword, or does it actually provide something? So I said that WHO is working with UNAIDS and UNICEF and the UNFPA, the Family Planning Program. Oh, that looks ugly. Well, to get a sense of how human rights would be framing the approach to health in the post-2015 agenda. And so these organizations in their thematic think piece that they've just developed in the last few months have noted that a human rights-based approach to health is essential. They said the right of everyone to enjoy the highest attainable standard of physical and mental health, and this is the language from the Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, is recognized in numerous global, regional, and national treaties and constitutions. It underpins action and provides part of the rationale for including health in the post-2015 development agenda. The progressive realization of civil, cultural, and political, as well as economic and social rights, is a prerequisite for sustainable growth and human development. And so note here that the emphasis that they're making is not only that health is necessary to a focus on sustainable development, but that focusing on health through a rights-based approach is absolutely essential if one is to incorporate health in the Sustainable Development Goals. And so the argument is being made that in order to assure health's principal place in the post-2015 agenda, the way it was prioritized in the Millennium Development Goals will require a focus on the extent to which human rights provides that rationale. And so moving forward from this, a series of propositions have been put into place, focusing conceptually on equity, trying to understand not simply averages again, but focusing on the extent to which the most marginalized are disadvantaged, focusing on the extent to which civil society can be empowered in a way that will create accountability, recognizing an interdependent set of targets, understanding the extent to which human rights are interdependent, interconnected, and how this is particularly important when focusing on underlying determinants of health. And then finally, and this is where we began our focus on human rights, strengthening universality, understanding the ways that all individuals benefit from human rights. A set of concepts that have been put into practice in the last several months in the Rio Plus 20 conference, focused on sustainable development in a way that specifically mentions how human rights can frame sustainable development, and then focusing on the report to the Secretary General, which just came out 2 weeks ago, on what's being called Realizing the Future We Want, the task force report on what should be in the post-2015 agenda. And so this is a unique opportunity to move forward both for the post-2015 agenda, but moving forward from that into the future, how is human rights going to frame our global health efforts? And so I've listed here two principal opportunities, different ways that policymakers are advocating for human rights. The first is in this joint monitoring program for water supply and sanitation. The data that we collect on water and sanitation, to what extent is that data being framed by human rights? And so an equity and non-discrimination working group under what is being called the JMP, the Joint Monitoring Program, is advocating for equity, collecting data in a way that will highlight disparities. And then secondly, in a more encompassing way, scholars had begun to propose a framework convention on global health, a convention that would encompass all of our global efforts to achieve health and would be framed in a specific way by human rights, that would focus on these concepts of universality, that would look at intersectoral approaches to health through what is now being called a health in all policies approach, to be advanced next summer at the UN Global Conference on Health Promotion, to focus on equity and not simply averages, to focus on the most marginalized as a means to take suffering seriously, and then finally to develop this legal accountability that has been largely absent. And so when we think about the role of human rights in the post-2015 agenda for global health, this is a crucial year in applying human rights in the global health agenda. To the extent that human rights become not simply a rhetorical buzzword, but a framework for advancing our global health efforts, then we will have taken suffering seriously. To the extent that the post-2015 agenda employs human rights the way the Millennium Development Goals did, then we will have missed a crucial opportunity, and we are, as I stated at the start of my talk, doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past. Thank you very much.